Moncrief on News Talk.
Let me guess, you like one of those Love Actually loving girls? Oh no, is it like the Crown? You're obsessed with the Crown? You're on like a pilgrimage?
No, I'm not obsessed with the Crown. Thank you very much. I'm a Wuthering Heights prime suspect rising, I guess.
Shit, okay. Sorry, I underestimated you.
Yeah, you did. You know, I did have a special edition Princess Diana beanie baby.
Yeah, we all had those. You've got like an American accent, right?
No, I'm not. I don't have that. I don't have an American accent. It's Slovakian, actually.
I've actually always liked American things.
That's Too Much. You can stream the entire first season now on Netflix. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon.
Is this Lena Dunham in London?
yeah, I mean, and Lena Dunham does appear in it herself. But yeah, this is kind of loosely based on her own life, very loosely, right? So it's co-created by Luis Felber, who is Lena Dunham's husband, excuse me, and a musician in his own right. And they met on a blind date and like 8 months later they were wed. And it's a fish out of water style rom-com dramedy for the Gen Z audience, let's say, right? So obviously Lena Dunham struck it big with Girls, probably 2010, I guess, at this point, right? And like Girls, it was a very controversial show. People liked it and hated it in equal measure. And what's been interesting is seeing people rediscover it on like, you know, platforms like TikTok in the last 3 years, where it's condensed to these scenes that are really funny and really good, but you didn't have to go through the misery of all of the rest of it, right? And here is a very interesting show that, again, I feel the same things about. There are standout episodes and there are standout scenes that I absolutely loved, but the whole thing, I was a little colder on than I wanted to be, and I really, really wanted to like it. So who we heard in the clip there was Megan Stalter, who's probably best known as Kayla in Hacks, the assistant to the agent of Deborah Vance.
Yeah.
And she's a very kind of well-known, I guess, millennial forward-facing comedian as well, who kind of became famous for these viral videos during the pandemic, like many comedic stars did, right?
Like everyone. Yeah.
Mine just didn't take off, right? Yeah. And we also heard Will Sharp, who is probably best known for The White Lotus, but had appeared in many other things as well and won a BAFTA for Giri Haji many years ago. So she plays Jessica, who is a New York girl working in advertising, dreams of being a director, is down on her luck after her long-term relationship has broken apart and her ex has now hooked up with like the hottest it girl on Instagram, and she has to look every day at how successful and wonderful their lives are in a way that her and her ex-boyfriend's romance never was. And in a fit of pique and a car crash encounter, decides that she's going to relocate to London and moves to London. Mm. And on her first night there, she heads to a pub and meets Will Sharp's Felix. He plays a kind of indie boy. Like, I don't know what the kind of boy version of a manic pixie dream girl is, but like, let's say indie guitar strumming dream boy, because that's what he is.
Okay.
Although, of course, he has a checkered past, including him being in recovery for alcoholism and drug addiction, amongst other kind of...
And she met him at a pub.
She meets him where he's performing.
Oh, right. Okay.
And they have their little meet cute in the alleyway outside, and sparks fly, and they completely improbable and unlikely to last relationship begins, and we follow it for the remaining, you know, 9 episodes of the season. Now, all in, as I said, I want to like this. I really like the character of Kayla in Hacks. I think Megan Stalter plays her fantastically well. I mean, I think everyone in that show is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to see her getting a, you know, promotion to a leading role. I was reading a little bit of her bio today and it said that, you know, she grew up kind of and was in her drama club in school and, you know, auditioned for everything and never got a main role. So I'm glad she's finally getting the main role. But for me, the main problem with the show is not her, nor is it Will Sharp's Felix. It's kind of everybody else built around them. So we have on the one side, Jessica's family. They're played by Rita Wilson, being her mother, Rhea Perlman, is her grandmother, Dottie. Lena Dunham plays her sister, Nora, in a number of scenes. Andrew Rannells plays her estranged brother-in-law. That's a bit of a girls reunited teamwork between those two. And they are living in New York, but kind of FaceTiming in and creating lots of personal familial dynamic problems on the one hand. And then on the other hand, you have her work environment, Where she's working in this advertising agency, surrounded by a cast of characters that seem to be in a completely different show, like a much more straightforward sitcom than this dramedy, right? Then you also have his, Will Sharpe's, Felix's friends, who are all, you know, toughy Brits with drug addiction and romance problems. And it just all felt kind of like it was a mishmash of completely different shows thrown together.
Yeah.
Like when I got to the finale and they tied up a loose end involving Lena Dunham and her character's arc, I kind of thought, why is her arc even needing to be tied up? Like, this is a character I've seen in 5 scenes in the entire 10 run episode. So did this need this big cathartic moment that didn't feel earned or justified? However, the moments between the pair, which is, you know, the main attraction here, this is all a rom-com, that feels really good and like funny and charming. There's a really good chemistry between them. I feel like you get the impression that there's a lot of improvisation going on in the acting, because you see the cast laughing a lot at what what I can only assume was not on the page and just came out of Megan Stalter's mouth. And I wanted more of that. It's just kind of all the rest of it, I was a bit like, can we just get to the good stuff?
Yeah. And the premise where she has a relationship and then she moves to a town and he seems terribly happy, isn't that like pretty much every show on Netflix?
Yes. If it's not broken, why fix it?
Right? Yeah.
Like, yeah, definitely. It fulfills a lot of those romantic tropes. And, you know, like, if you told me that this was season 6 of Girls, I'd also believe you, right? Like,
okay.
Her character is different from Hannah, right? She's not an aspiring writer. She's an aspiring director. She, like, has a boyfriend with, you know, issues that will they, won't they make it, just like Adam and Hannah had in Girls, right? So, yes, Lena Dunham is retracing a lot of the steps that she already covered here. But as I said, the pairing of the two of them, and there are a couple of episodes where it's almost like a two-hander just between the pair of the two main stars that work extremely well. For me, it's anytime they brought anyone else into the fray, I felt like I was watching a completely different show that made no sense at all.
Yeah.
Now, they do attract really good guest stars, right? Like, the guests are Jessica Alba, Kit Harington, Andrew Scott, Stephen Fry, a career-making turn by Rita Ora, Jennifer Saunders, and Naomi Watts, who is in a couple of episodes. And everyone in it is obviously attracted by Lena Dunham's name because, you know, she is a big-name writer. And everyone in it is good. It's just the whole mixture, to me, felt odd at times.
Has Rita Ora ever acted in anything before?
She has acted in, like, a few bit parts in films that I have never seen. She was in Pokemon Detective.
I knew I'd seen her someplace.
But other than that, I can't really name. She was in an Oliver Twist spin-off, but I can't remember what it's called yet. But honestly, she's very funny in this.
Is she? Okay, yeah. Well, good. Fair juice to her. Right, our next show is Creature Commandos. You can stream all of season 1 now on Sky Max and Now TV. Here's a clip.
What in the holy hell?
This is the Belle Reve Non-Human Internment Division. For over 50 years, only those at the uppermost levels of security clearance are aware of its existence. By using these prisoners, I think we can arguably circumvent our new restrictions.
Arguably? How?
Congress said we can't use human prisoners. These assholes aren't human.
She's not human?
Is a corpse human?
Who is she?
We don't know.
Right, Creature Commandos. This is animation, I should point out. Is this part of the DC attempt to take over the world?
Yes. And kind of why I think it's interesting is because, you know, right, so Marvel kind of broke the mold. They released Iron Man in 2008, and it's been a long checkered past in the 17 years since then to get them to this kind of awkward moment in there where nothing seems to be hitting and they're really hoping Fantastic Four pays off, right? The DCEU was later to the game and then a complete and utter critical flop. And they've decided instead to rebrand it and reboot it. And it's all being built around James Gunn, the director, right? Now, it's kind of interesting because the Marvel Universe was built around, let's say, its actors.
Yeah.
And here, everything is built around James Gunn, the director. He is now the CEO of DC Studios. And this was the first thing he greenlit when he got that job. And he also, he writes it and he appears in the opening credits as in like a little animated version of him winking and nodding at you.
Okay.
Like written by James Gunn, appears right at the end. He's the and, you know, co-starring or like and featuring person at the end of the credits.
Oh, so this is a bit like the equivalent of, what's his name was always in all the Marvel movies.
Stan Lee, a little bit, yes. Right? So I found it interesting in that regard. And if you know James Gunn's career beyond, let's say, Guardians of the Galaxy. So he also made this precursor called Super, which was a kind of superhero movie, but Slither. He's into kind of very tongue-in-cheek, racy, explicit violence, kind of Cronenbergian body horror weirdo stuff on top of that. And this is that to its extreme. Now, I don't think it would exist in the same vein if Invincible didn't exist, the Amazon version, which is, you know, like a similar, let's say, treading similar ground, right? A hyper-violent, hyper-realized pastiche of comic books, although it is just a comic book series in and of itself, right? Yeah. So here we have basically not the Suicide Squad. So instead of taking the people we already maybe have heard of, if you have some kind of cursory knowledge of DC characters, taking the absolute scraping of the bottom of the barrel of DC characters. Those include the Bride, we'll say the Bride of Frankenstein. She's voiced by Indira Varma. You have Sean Gunn, James Gunn's younger brother, who's probably best known for Gilmore Girls, playing G.I. Robot and Weasel. Alan Tudyk as Dr. Phosphorus. Zoe Chow as Nina Mazursky. David Harbour as Frankenstein. And then Frank Grillo as Rick Flagg Sr., who just appeared in, he is in Superman, which was released on Friday, as the same character. So it is definitely canon. And we heard in the clip there Viola Davis as Amanda Waller, who is the quote-unquote Nick Fury of the DC Extended Universe.
Okay.
Right? So it is basically the same story as Suicide Squad in that Amanda Waller, gathers together this team of monsters.
Yeah.
Right there. Instead of being villains, they're monsters and sends them off on a mission. Now, it is funny and incredibly violent and very repetitive, not only in the sense that this is rehashing the same kind of plot as Suicide Squad, which already happened twice. Yeah. But each episode serves as a sort of introduction to each of the characters because we don't know who any of them are, right? Or any of them is. Obviously, we know who the Bride of Frankenstein is and we know who Frankenstein are, but not in the sense of the DC Extended Universe. But do you know who Nina Mazursky is?
No idea.
You'll find out in episode 7, right?
Oh my gosh, can't wait.
And all in, it is a very, very tongue-in-cheek, hyper-violent, incredibly bombastic action sequences that animation can do in a way that live action simply can't. And did I like it? I'm on the fence, ultimately.
Okay.
Like, certainly it has humor and mirth and sardonic wit and eyeballs being popped out of skulls left, right and center in every single episode. But even I, who is someone who vaguely likes this kind of stuff, I'm feeling a fatigue to this, even though this is the first installment of, you know, the DC Extended Universe.
That's not a good sign.
Right? So I'm intrigued to see where it'll go in season two. And it has been not only greenlit for season two, but it's been like put on the advanced production list. So we're not going to be waiting 3 years for a season two to come around. This debuted in the US ages ago. It has only just come to Sky now, but it finished in the US in January. So we're, you know, 6 months behind.
Ah, right.
But I think they're tying it in with the release of Superman, which I think had a very good weekend at the box office, less maybe good at the critical critical take. But all in, if you're looking for something to scratch your Invincible itch while you're waiting for a better show and a better version of this to return, I think it will do that. If you're not interested, I wouldn't even bother.
Yeah, so that's a subset of a subset, really. Yeah, people fair. With an Invincible, and like, kind of risky. At least Marvel put everything on the actors. They can always hire new actors.
Sure.
DC is just putting it on one guy.
And I just don't know if James Gunn is that big of a name yet, really.
Yeah,
as in, certainly Guardians of the Galaxy was a career-defining trilogy for him and a really, really successful one at the box office. It has made probably in excess of $1 billion. But I just don't know if he's so well known that he merits inclusion in the kind of opening credits.
Yeah. and inclusion of himself in actual productions, yeah. Right, our third show is Foundation. New episodes of season 3 every Friday on Apple TV. Plus, here's a clip.
This tree is all that remains of an orchard where the humans who supported us were executed.
And you choose this for our meeting?
During the war, robots were destroyed. Remnants from our bodies, bronze, liquid iridium, seeped into the soil of the orchard. These apples are gold in color because the fluids within us, our blood, is gold in color. It's also poisonous to humans.
Okay, that's Foundation. It just, I watched it and it's just kind of tiring. There's like too much of it in the sense of you're going here and there. Yeah. And who's that person? Who
did, did you get to the second season even?
Yeah. No, okay. The second season was a bit more digestible. Yeah.
And but, funny. What the second season did was it injected a lot of humour, which had been completely devoid.
It's so po-faced.
I actually didn't finish the first season and then knew it was coming out. So I was like, okay, I have to watch this in order to like be able to talk about and know what I'm talking about. Mm. And it was grueling to go through that first season a second time, the first 5 episodes that I'd already seen and completely forgotten. So this is grand sci-fi stuff from David S. Goyer, who makes The Sandman, but also The Dark Knight trilogy, and Josh Friedman, who wrote actually The Fantastic Four first steps, which is coming out in a month or a couple of weeks' time, and based on the books by Asimov. Hmm. And it is a grand sci-fi opera, space opera, involving basically this ill-defined foundation of mathematicians who are using statistics, but also whatever the hell they want, whatever line of dialogue makes vague sense, to take down this genetically cloned series of emperors who form empire and control the whole universe. And the first season, which was actually shot in the studios in Limerick, so features lots of Irish actors and lots of Irish locations, involves the setting up of this foundation on a planet in the far reaches of space called Terminus. And then we jumped forward, let's say 150 years, quote unquote, for season 2, which saw that the foundation had sort of become this quasi-religious thing, going around different planets proselytizing their works of Harry Seldon to take down the thing. And then we jump again forward to this third crisis in the third season, another 150 years. And the problem with that is there is a constant core cast. Some of them basically go to sleep for 150 years and then get woken up to move the action along. They are Jared Harris as Harry Seldon and Lou Lobel as Gail Dornick. But then you have the cloned emperors, Cleons. They moved the E forward 2 letters from clone to Cleon. You have Lee Pace as Brother Day. You have Terrence Mann as Brother Dusk and Cassian Bolton as Brother Dawn. And they are aided and abetted and advised by, I'm going to say, Laura Byrne. She's a Finnish actress. That's who we heard giving the very monotonous clip there, who plays Demerzel, who is a robot, android. Now, she's 15,000 years old, and it feels like I've been talking about this for 15,000 years. Now, the problem with the show is, if you finally get into a season, anyone who isn't those people I've just mentioned is not going to be in the next season, because they constantly jump forward by 150 years, roughly, each season.
But Harry Seldon's been in all of them. Yeah. Harry Seldon is now 9 million years old, or is he kind of a copy of Harry Seldon?
He's
either
a AI inside of a kind of paperweight, or he is a copy of kind of a copied clone version. I'm a bit actually unclear, to be honest, and I didn't care enough to go back and exactly figure it out. Now, when it is good, and when there are moments, obviously, each season, it's going for a Game of Thronesy courtly intrigue vibe, along with grand spectacle war, which in this case is usually taking place in space, right? When it does that, and when the big events come towards the end of a season, they are exciting and breathtaking and interesting and beautifully shot and lovely. You know, the rendering is perfect because Apple pours endless amounts of money into this. But the rest of it is just this kind of slightly confusing, monotonous rehashing of the same thing over and over and over again. As in the version of the story we're now in, it's 300 years since the formation of the foundation. And like, you know, they're still they still haven't achieved their goal. And I'm telling you, this is an 8-season planned show.
Oh, my God.
So we have a while to go yet. The other thing is, despite being Apple's kind of flagship science fiction show, shall we say, it has nowhere near the critical impact nor cultural impact of something like Severance, right?
Yeah,
which
yeah.
came out of nowhere, a completely original IP. This was an established IP that admittedly maybe not a lot of people were familiar with, but had a whole universe upon which to build and expand. And I don't hear anybody talking about Foundation. You know, I don't hear anyone in the public talk ever mention it or ever bring it up. So it's a kind of, I can't say it's a unmissed gem because it isn't. But when it's good, it is good. The problem is it just isn't very good all that often.
Yeah. I wonder how, do they feel a pressure or whether it's external or internal to be very faithful to the books?
Not at all, because a lot of the characters, basically any of the female characters have been gender flipped from their original version.
Okay. Yeah.
They were
yeah.
all men in the original novels. And I read the first Foundation book in anticipation of the series and found it to be not that interesting.
That's the point. He was a terrible writer. He had great ideas, but he couldn't string a sentence together properly. And he couldn't structure things properly either. It was more the ideas were kind of mind-blowing for the time.
Let's greenlight 8 seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Those three shows are Too Much. You can stream the entire first season now on Netflix. Creature Commandos. You can stream all of season 1 now on Sky Max and Now TV. And the third series of Foundation. New episodes every Friday on Apple TV Plus. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.